support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Peculiar Perils of Pills show, where we will talk about our preoccupation with medications in our society and choosing medication over lifestyle, choosing medication over weight loss, choosing medication pretty much over any other way to solve our problems. I'm joined in the studio, first of all, from the University of Kentucky by assistant professor in the physician assistant program, Shelley Irving. Hi, Shelley.
Hello.
And also the executive director of networking and infrastructure, who will begin our show by explaining how to access us on the internet.
I will, but first I want to explain to the world why you say things that you do, like you do. Because you're the legendary Tony Weaver.
If we were a rock and roll band, I would be the lead singer and compose most of the songs. And Shelley would play the tambourine because she's a girl, right? I mean, everybody
agrees
on
wrong,
that.
That's wrong, Tony. That's wrong on six different levels. And
Rick would, so like the long hair, the flowers in the hair.
Right.
And
would I be the flamboyant
like Partridge
drummer?
Family kind of.
Heavens no, Rick. You would get coffee and you would be around to make copies.
I'd be the drummer. I'd be what hold this thing together.
I'm thinking it's really just a one-man show.
Can you hold us together by explaining
one
the internet, Rick?
Legendary man. Yes, I can most certainly explain the alternative ways of getting Health Matters. You can find it on Moorhead State Public Radio's website. That is WMKY.org. Find Health Matters in the menu. Jump over there. You'll see a list of the shows. But most importantly, in each of those lists, you'll find a link to the audio of the show. You can listen to that show over and over. You can download it, put it in your car, play it through your device, send it to a friend. You can do all kinds of things with those audio files. Of course, if you know what a podcast is, there's a link there to get to the podcast. And if you like that, you should read up on it, because with a podcast, you can have the media delivered to your device automatically about 4 days after it airs the first time on Moorhead State Public Radio. After that, you've decided it's time to interact with the show. Do facebook.com/HMRadioshow and you'll find our fan page. That's where you have a chance to leave us some messages. You can give us some feedback. What do you think of the show? Need a show topic for us to talk about? Or maybe you just like the show. You know, the other thing, too, is you can interact with both the staff of the show and you can interact with the other fans of the show. And, you know, you see a little activity out there from time to time. We tend to get in there and mix it up ourselves. So it's not like you'll get a canned response. You'll get right to us. So, again, I would encourage you to go to facebook.com/HMRadioshow.
Our sponsor is Allergies. When sniffling and sneezing comes every spring, it may be that allergies are your thing. That is right. If you get a cold every March and it lasts through every April, I believe you might have some allergies. This is high time. This is the high season of allergies in the Daniel Boone National Forest. That includes Kentucky and all the way down south of us into Tennessee, North Carolina, South Carolina. A lot of pollen out there right now. A lot of people suffering because of the pollen in the air. And so as a public service, as we always do, Health Matters is here to give you some advice on taking care of those nasty spring allergies. First of all, we talk about avoidance. And Shelley, when you say to avoid pollen,
mm-hmm.
what's your first piece of advice to people in avoiding pollen?
Lock yourself in a bubble. It's really bad this year. It coats everything. And that coating that gets on your cars also gets in your lungs, up your nose, in your eyes.
It's bad news. So first of all, it may be that our climate change, the rapid cycling of temperature may compress the season a little bit, but it does make it more intense. The trees seem to all be starting up about the same time. We talk about closing the windows and staying indoors and running the air conditioner, even on a nice night. If you do have outdoor tasks, do them in the morning when the dew tamps the pollen down a little bit, or right after it rains is also a good time to do some outdoor activities. Sometimes you have to work in the yard, and we understand that. If you have to go outside, realize that you, too, just like your automobile, your pond, whatever is outside, will become coated with pollen.
You might need to wear a mask to keep it out of your lungs.
To keep it out of your nasal passageway. But when you come back inside, if you do not change your clothes, if you do not take a shower, then you essentially are a little pollen puffball.
Mm-hmm.
If the pollen...
Some of us bigger than others.
There are various sizes of pollen puffballs here in the studio. You can kind of pick out your size from our collection. But the other part of it is, if it is in your hair, then you will toss and roll all night long in a blanket of pollen. So washing the pollen out of your hair, changing clothes, is another part of avoidance. And then finally, as Shelley mentioned, either you wear a mask, or if you don't wear a mask, you can use a nasal saline spray to at least rinse the pollen out of your nose so that you will not be breathing it for the first few hours after you come inside. So avoidance is not simply about staying inside. It's about managing your outside trips and trying to make sure that they don't result in you breathing pollen all day and all night after maybe an hour or two outside. And then finally, if you have indoor-outdoor pets, if you have a pet door, realize that they themselves are little pollen puffs when they come inside, and they can, in fact, expose you to pollen even if you yourself do not go outside. So that is avoidance. That is the first step in avoiding spring pollen. And I'll just give you a hint of what comes next. I have an article that we used on this show back in 2015, and also an article from the Medical Letter of Drugs and Therapeutics in April 2019, and both of them say the same thing. Intranasal, nose sprays, corticosteroids are the most effective drugs available for the prevention and treatment of allergic nasal symptoms. I'll say it again. Nasal corticosteroids. Now, these are medicines like Flonase, which is fluticasone, Nasacort, Rhinocort, Nasonex, Becanase. These nose sprays that are steroid nose sprays are hands down the most effective drugs available for prevention and treatment of allergic symptoms. So that's where you start. They are available without a prescription now. There are generics available. They're still a little pricey, but well worth the money in terms of alleviating suffering. And even though it's very easy to be Claritin Clear and take a tablet, the first step has to be these nasal steroids. That's our sponsor, Allergies. When sniffling and sneezing comes every spring, it may be allergies are your thing. Now, explaining a little bit about how we came about this show. As usual, articles come in, we look at them, we laugh a little bit, and then we decide maybe it should be on the radio show. The first article...
Well, how do you mean we?
Well, Shelley talks to me, Rick.
Gee.
And if it's a technology thing, I will listen to you. For instance, if you have been to the Consumer Electronics Show...
I get 10 minutes a year. That's what you're saying.
Well, other than cybersecurity, yes. When it's technological, yes. You get
whatever.
That.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Just wake me up when you want me to talk.
Sure. The British Medical Journal, now known as the BMJ, ran an editorial about how we try to solve our health problems. And they pointed out, first of all, their health associations there in the United Kingdom have embraced the idea from the American Heart Association and the American College of Cardiology, that the proper top number on your blood pressure should be 120, no more. And if you have a top number of over 130, you have high blood pressure and need to do something about it. This, in the United States, will essentially mean that half of all Americans will have the condition high blood pressure, which is known as the silent killer. I always love that. Well, you have the silent killer. I don't want you to worry about this, but you have the silent...
Do you hear it?
Yeah. That is the sound. There it is. Thanks, Rick. But it bothered me. It is itself a risk factor for heart disease. And we have become very good at treating it, or at least better than we used to be. And that may have fueled some of the decline in death rates due to heart disease and possibly altered the landscape regarding Alzheimer's disease and some dementias. We're not sure about that. But certainly that has been a great success treating high blood pressure. There are those of us who feel that putting half the United States population on medications for high blood pressure may be excessive. We'll discuss this in more detail a little bit later. But at any rate, in the United Kingdom, they are looking at that as well. And they also, of course, cardiologists have been very aggressive about promoting medication for lowering cholesterol. Some of those medicines were not proven to change outcomes, but I think most cardiologists now are sticking with these statins, which have been amazingly effective at changing the history of heart disease by lowering cholesterol. You have those things, and if you are a specialist, you want to use them. But the British Medical Journal, the BMJ, They ask, is this really the way we want to approach public health? Do we turn this over to specialists who are used to prescribing medicines and ask them to be in charge of to safeguard our public health, our general welfare, knowing that the tool they have is medicines and for that matter, catheterizations and surgery? Should we, in fact, look for our public health decisions more at changing our diet, at boosting some types of foods like vegetables and trying to limit others rather than always going to pills? Should we put, in fact, consumers on the guideline boards of the American Heart Association, the American College of Cardiology, and Britain's NICE, this is their National Institute for Clinical Evaluation, I think. Should we have citizens there rather than just arm those boards with specialists who are going to prescribe more medicines and diagnose more diseases?
It's an interesting idea to put just regular citizens or patients on these boards, but what about policy? You know, should we look to public health to help change policy? Because I don't see a lot of that. The people driving the policy are the people who have the money, which are the pharmacists and the insurance companies.
Well, the idea was that the general practitioner in the United Kingdom or the family practitioner in the United States could balance the treatments of various diseases. And I'll go ahead just to line this out. The problem you see with this is that these cardiologists, they look at cardiac disease and they want to treat cardiac disease until it disappears, which is a noble goal. But putting the treatment of cardiac disease in line with the treatment of lung disease, the treatment of diabetes, the treatment of kidney disease, and so forth, if we allow the specialist societies to each issue their own guidelines, no one is in charge of balancing those so that the people get the best overall health for the amount of money spent. So unfortunately, in the United States, the family practice and primary care is so anemic, it is so underdeveloped, the idea that they would be the ultimate arbiters of what lifestyle person should adopt versus taking pills is absurd. So maybe if we had at least had some citizens on the specialist boards that make out these guidelines, perhaps we might be able to restore some balance to them. But as of right now, every specialty society issues guidelines that treat its disease as if it were the only disease. They are based on research that has carefully screened out patients with other diseases. So there is no balance in the research, and there is no balance in the research outcomes. These were simply people who had one disease. They treated that disease, and the patients got better. However, when it comes to actually knowing what the harms of that treatment of that disease is, those were not considered in the research. So we get unbalanced research creating unbalanced guidelines, which emphasize using more and more pills.
And you're right. A lot of these diseases, when you talk about prevention, and if we want to look at the front end of the issue, a lot of the same things will prevent all of those diseases. But you're right. We don't have this balanced way, and we don't talk to our patients in that way either, really. I mean, we really don't. We focus on the disease that they're there for. We focus on the refill that they're there for. And we don't always do a good job putting it in perspective and balancing all of their illnesses for them.
We're going to focus on taking a break now. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio. Please stay tuned for our second fractional portion.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of health care professionals through community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Shelley Irving.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Peculiar Perils of Pills show. It is our attempt to at least consider a more rational approach to our use of medications in the United States, to give our radio fans some insight into the problems that we are about to face because we take so many pills. Possibly look at some alternatives, although that's a lot for our radio show. Usually we start off with goods and then we start telling fart jokes and then everything falls apart. Our sponsor for the second time, Allergies When Sniffling and Sneezing Comes Every Spring. It may be that allergies are your thing. We are talking about the spring allergies, particularly to the tree pollens that are present in late April and early May. And we'll probably be till at least mid-May or through June still persistent, and you may be suffering from that. We talked last time about getting serious about avoiding pollen. And if you can avoid pollen, that is the best way to treat these. You don't have to take the side effects and the cost of medications. You can make some sensible changes in your lifestyle and at least lower your pollen counts no matter what you do. I just think trying to fortify yourself with medications and just wade into this pollen is going to be difficult.
So what are you doing? What are you doing to solve all this for you?
We do not open our windows in the spring.
That's your solution?
That's our starting point. We don't have indoor-outdoor pets. My wife does take one of the nasal corticosteroid sprays, and I try to keep the windows down. She's well enough controlled with her allergies that she doesn't come back in and take a shower. But on the especially the dry, dusty days, I mean, there's a lot of reasons to change clothes after you've been outside. We've got a pretty heavy infestation of ticks this spring. We've already seen that. And so why would you want to keep those clothes on after you've been
Shelley,
outside
can
working?
Can you beat that? Are you going to do something better than that?
No, I break all the rules.
See,
I take my Flonase and go on.
I got that beat, Tony.
What do you do?
I have 4.5 for the next 7 weeks. I'm not going to be around.
Well,
I'm just leaving town.
Are you headed west?
West, yes,
you
I am.
You are. So you're going to Utah, aren't you?
I'm going to Utah. I'm going to be in Vegas. I'm going to be in California. I'm going to be in Austin.
These are low pollen areas. I don't know how New York is on pollen, but certainly not where Kentucky is. So
I'm pretty sure the pollen count in the middle of New York City is probably not high.
Yeah. So it looks to me like you have almost a foolproof plan, except for you. Of course, you back to medications.
That's Mary's problem,
corticosteroids, not yours, right? They're the most effective drugs. These are the ones you want to get. These are the nasal sprays. And again, the Flonase and Rhinocort are available over the counter. Right next to them is a store brand for half price. We strongly urge you to use them. They appear to be similar in their effectiveness. The onset of action occurs within 12 hours. Maximal effects may not be achieved for up to 7 days. So I usually, at the first sign of pollen, which it's obviously too late for that now, but at the first sign of pollen, I try to get my patients started up on these. Antihistamines, the old, we call them first generation antihistamines, which is basically Benadryl or diphenhydramine in its various forms. It's also the stuff that makes NyQuil and all that stuff. They're generally not recommended. They just make you too sleepy. They interfere with
reaction time. Mix them with enough alcohol, they work fine, Tony.
Rick is an enthusiastic supporter of all forms of NyQuil, but for the rest of us, they're not the ones we recommend. Second generation are pretty good, less effective for nasal congestion, but they're very effective for nasal itching, sneezing, and a runny nose. Claritin, Allegra, Zyrtec, Claritin, Zyrtec available over the counter. Addition of the antihistamines to a nasal corticosteroid, not proven to be more effective than the corticosteroid alone, the nasal spray, but most people do that. I mean, that's a very common combination, Claritin or Zyrtec with the Flonase or Rhinocort. And then there are some others. And by the way, both of these are indicated for eye allergies, watery eyes. They both have some effects for watery eyes. Decongestants, I'll just tell you, not strongly recommended for that watery nose. Sudafed is the main one, and there are newer ones. The PE, they have phenylephrine, which can really run your blood pressure up and doesn't really have many benefits. But at any rate, pseudoephedrine is in all the D's. Anything with a D on it has pseudoephedrine in it. This is good for a stopped-up nose when your nose is very congested and you can't breathe through it. If you are your nose is running and watery, that has no role, so you don't need the Claritin D for that. You just need plain Claritin. There are some intranasal decongestants. I only use those when a person can't breathe through their nose. This is Afrin, Neosinephrine, and some of those nose sprays. They will open up your nasal passageway if it's stopped up, but they really don't have much of a role in allergies. We'll talk more about medications in our third fractional portion. That is our sponsor, Allergies. When sniffling and sneezing comes every spring, it may very well be that allergies are your thing. Now, talking about medications, and I mentioned that the specialist societies, they look at the results of clinical research where people with a certain disease are placed on a medication and they appear to do better, and then they make a guideline recommending that medication for that disease. It makes sense. It's scientific. What could be wrong with that? This I found actually April 5th, and it was from the Lown Institute. Bernie Lown was a cardiologist, and the Lown Institute they made it their mission to address the high-price, low-quality healthcare that seems to be common in American medicine today. And they started looking back in July of 2018, looking for a national plan for addressing medication overload. and they plan to publish this in 2020. But they have collected some data, and they published that April 5th, and I found it, and I wanted to give you a few facts about the pills we're taking. Every day, 750 people over age 65 living in the United States are hospitalized due to side effects from one or more medications. 750 people a day in the hospital. Over the last decade, more than 2 million hospital admissions, 35 million emergency room visits or treatment seeking for adverse drug events. More than 4 in 10 older adults over age 65 take 5 or more prescriptions, and 20% of our senior citizens take 10 drugs or more every day. 5 million older adults sought medical attention for adverse drug reactions in 2018. 300% increase in polypharmacy. Polypharmacy means take, again, usually more than five pills. And 150,000 premature deaths in the next 10 years due to the side effects of all these pills that we take. Several reasons the Lown Institute has come up with for us, for the reason that we do this. One is TV. I mean, how can you be happy without taking a pill?
They make them catchy, too, and cartoony and kind of fun to watch. And
the pill that handles people with an enlarged prostate, if you can't empty your bladder for an enlarged prostate, the pill you take is something called Flomax. You know, if I'm sitting there and I'm having trouble peeing and somebody offers
me
Flomax.
The idea of Flomax sounds pretty good, huh?
Yeah.
It really does. So you're right. The names are good. Abilify. Helps with your depression and helps you be able to focus.
What's the little one where you walk around with your bladder?
Oh.
Holding hands with your bladder. What was that? What did an overactive, if you have an overactive
If you have an overactive bladder. And those medications, they're horrible medicines. I'm forgetting the brand name of the one you're talking about.
Yeah.
But the 50% discontinuation rate due to side effects.
He's just so cute.
The little cute bladder. Just right there with the pollen puff. Pollen puffs and bladders. We should have Health Matters cartoon characters. So I deserve that. Then secondly, they point out, you know, we clinicians, again, we look at very carefully controlled research trials, and we don't have that real-life information to understand how these pills will interact with the other pills. And so when do we call a halt to the aggressive management of one disease because we're worried it's going to upset the apple cart on another disease?
Do you think that someday that Watson's going to help us with that?
No. Watson has totally screwed things up. I am.
How do you really feel?
Well, I mean, it used to be, and Shelley, you feel free to chime in. I used to talk to doctors about my patients. We no longer talk. We don't even talk during lunchtime. I spend my entire lunch hour.
Well, that's just with you.
Just clicking on a computer. No, as a matter of fact, there have been editorials written on the isolation of physicians.
Know. The whole it's not just physicians, Tony. It's the world.
I mean,
if we can't look down at our little screen, we don't know how to talk.
In fact, we document everything, but we don't discuss anything. So I think it actually has made things worse, and I just don't see a computerized solution.
But don't you believe that drug interactions could be something that could actually be left to a big data machine?
Possibly. But as you know, Rick, you have convinced me that this computer is only as good as the information that's inputted. And if it comes from our scientific research does not mimic a real life situation. It mimics a one disease state, and none of my patients has one disease.
How do you look up today a drug interaction? You look it up in a
book.
I mean, I'm just saying, if you automate that times five medications are taken times this, I mean, I think it makes it easier to identify potential problems.
But here's the thing.
It may not solve the problem.
Computers right now, I mean, I actually get warnings and notifications when I prescribe a medicine. Some of them are actually helpful. But it is a drug-drug interaction, one drug with another drug. What if they're taking five or six, and what if they suddenly decide they're going to eat broccoli? I have no idea how that affects any of them. It might boost the level of one, which would then interact with another and reduce the effectiveness of a third. I that is beyond our computer program.
So, Tony, the way I see this, though, is I'm in tech, right? And we have, in some cases.
And I've hurt your feelings. I understand that.
No, you haven't. So, in some cases, we have labs that we test and we evaluate. And for years, sometimes labs were a second set of equipment, right?
Yeah.
Well, nowadays what you see, the labs are going to virtualized environment or pretend, right? So it's all a computer that understands the physical characteristics of what that thing can do. That gear has this much torque, or it has this much tensile strength, or it has this, you know, and so then you can go in and test the entire system virtually because you know how things work and you know how it's spec'd out. obviously, we have not specced out the human body yet and every single cell and every single interaction. But I think as we move farther down the road, I think you will start to see they'll be able to take a part of the body and simulate it at an organic level, basically at a cell level. And I bet you that finds its way into these simulator systems, and they can simulate what something does to the body.
It could be. I think by the time we get to that, we're going to stop taking a pill by mouth for everything.
Well, no, I didn't say it was tomorrow.
Metabolism.
But that's where Watson comes in. Watson helps you. Today we can do, I'm sitting here looking at a Diet Coke can. We can put that Diet Coke can in a system, and we can, we know it's made of aluminum or a portion of parts of aluminum. There's things we just know, and it's not very big, and we can do that. The human body is just so huge and has so many, there's just, so many data points that's where something like a Watson gives us hope.
That's an interesting idea. And to Tony's point, there's so many variables, and the whole idea of the human biome and the gut biome and the flora and in the different areas of our body, how does that even factor in when somebody's taking 35 medications?
Yep. And we cannot simulate that at this point in time, perhaps sometime in the future. But my thinking, again, by the time we're able to simulate a 35-pill environment, we probably won't.
I agree with you. I think doing that. But what we might be able to do is we might be able to simulate some portion of the body. I mean, I think you'll see it progress where we can simulate. I mean, even if we could simulate the actual growth of a body, right? I mean, there's things that we could do. But I'm just saying, you see it in technology where we're able to build virtual models now and really do some crazy mathematical testing on it. And again, it's...
I wish I shared your optimism. You know, I'm remembering when the X-rays were first discovered. I went to Vanderbilt University, and there's a museum.
You were around when
museum.
That happened?
Nope.
He talks like he was.
It did, didn't it? I actually was there looking at the History of Medicine exhibit at Vanderbilt, and one of the first things that the physics department at Vanderbilt did is they X-rayed the chairman's head. Until his hair fell out. And then they published a paper on the depilatory effects of X-rays. And so from X-raying someone's head till their hair falls out to our current knowledge of radiation and how it absolutely must be limited, it makes me pessimistic. You know, the pace of scientific discovery sort of outpaces our ability to understand the implications of it. I just think right now we are simply, as a society, taking too many pills. And if we're putting that many people in the emergency room and in the hospital, that is not counted into these society guidelines that recommend taking more pills and making more people have high blood pressure and more people have high cholesterol to try to avoid heart disease. We're not looking at that side of things at all.
And I don't think it's a coincidence that as pills are pushed, and as it's, we're incentivized to treat and treat and treat and penalized if we don't, that life expectancy is either stagnant or here in Eastern Kentucky gone down. That's not a coincidence to me at all.
I think the answer is not in the pills. A short one, and then I'm going to probably get started on something that may take us a little bit of time to get through. We brought this up in Health Matters, a few months ago. Folks at Allergan, they have an excellent eye medication called Restasis. Restasis is making money hand over fist, so much so that Mylan, Teva Pharmaceuticals, and Acorn, these generic drug makers, they have petitioned for a review of the patent. This means it goes in front of a special panel, determines whether or not Allergan really is able to maintain the patent on this. Perhaps parts of it were not truly revolutionary. They wanted a review of the patent. Now, this is a much more hostile environment for the Allergan folks than the standard courts, so this review was going to give them problems. They attempted to transfer the patent to the St. Regis, New York, Mohawk tribe and invoke tribal immunity from the patent office review. And the Supreme Court on April 16th refused to hear their challenge that they should be allowed to transfer their patent to the Mohawk tribe. So they will not be able to hide that patent from review in the Mohawk tribe. These are the people that are making the pills that we are taking. And you can imagine, this was not in the public interest to have the Mohawk Indian tribe own patents. This was not furthering scientific research. This was not because of the known Mohawk tribal fairness or love of scientific inquiry. This was simply an attempt to circumvent U.S. patent law and make more money off Restasis. And if those are the people pulling the strings, if those are the people controlling our use of pills, it cannot make you feel good.
No. Not at all.
I never get the warm fuzzies about the pharmaceutical companies. I just don't.
Well, I try, because everyone is working in their own self-interest in this. So you try not to make villains, but then you see people who are just acting in ways that in my mind are immoral. I mean, that leads me to the next article. I'll just introduce this and we'll talk more about it. This came from Ezekiel Emanuel, one of the principal authors of the Affordable Care Act during the Obama administration, and brother to Rahm Emanuel, who is now, I think, mayor of Chicago. But Ezekiel Emanuel, April 2019 in Health Affairs, asked, "When is the price of a drug unjust?" He pointed out that 60% of Americans believe lowering drug prices should be a top healthcare priority for the federal government. Drug costs have increased with the growth of specialty drugs and price hikes for existing drugs. And some of these price increases, he used the term gargantuan. We're looking at drugs that cost over $500,000 a year.
Wow.
He says, "When is this unfair?" He said, "Well, I mean, if you have a very expensive meal or a $1,000 smartphone, no one argues that that's unfair. It may not be worth it, but it's not unfair. But food, housing, and health care are things that are basic goods necessary to live a decent human life," says Emanuel. "Broadly accepted theories of justice as well as human rights statements classify medical care as a basic necessity. So it is not like your smartphone. It is not like a very expensive restaurant meal. If you charge excessively high price for basic necessities such as drugs," says Emanuel, "this is unjust because it represents price gouging and therefore exploitation. It takes advantage of a person's compromised circumstances to deliver a valuable good, but at an excessively high price. When a rescuer demands that a drowning person sign over their house to be rescued, that is exploitive and unjust. Excessive drug prices are the same as asking a person to sign over their house when they're drowning."
Well, haven't we in the past looked up some of the mission statements for some of these pharmaceutical companies? I'm just going to throw that out there because it's quite enlightening.
Yes, it is. It is profitability, is treatment of diseases, but there is not that point where they are committed to delivering medical care to everyone. That's not a part of their business model. And we've allowed that to happen, and we've allowed it to flourish. And he mentions, the last fact I'll make on this fractional portion, society rather than the individuals pays the price for these drugs. Few people can afford to pay $300,000 a year for drugs, so it goes into our health insurance, and we collectively want to help other people, and so we all wind up paying the price for this, again, this drowning person's life-saving drug. We're going to pay the price now and take a break. We'll come back in a moment with our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Shelley Irving.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Peculiar Perils of Pills show. It is our salute to the over-medicated American healthcare system. The sponsor for the final time, Allergies When Sniffling and Sneezing, comes every spring. It may be that allergies are your thing. We talked about avoidance, keeping the windows closed. If you go outside, protecting your nose, perhaps with a mask. If you don't protect your nose, you might get some of those nasal saline sprays and rinse your nose out after you come back in. Also, remember that your pets are little pollen puffs. You yourself can be a little pollen puff if you keep the same clothes on and you do not wash your hair out after you have been outside in heavy pollen. So avoidance is absolutely the cornerstone, the most effective drug for the past 4 years running. Intranasal corticosteroids available over-the-counter or by prescription. These are the nose sprays, and many of them, the Flonase, the Rhinocort, nasal steroid sprays. The onset of action within 12 hours, maximal effectiveness within 7 days. Accompanying that, many people use a second generation, the non-sedating antihistamines. This is the Claritin Allegra, and to some extent, at some doses, the Zyrtec as well. for their second action. We talked about decongestant medicines, the D's, really not much use for allergies. Intranasal decongestants, also, this is Afrin and Neosinephrine. They're good if your nose is blocked, is stopped up, if you're about to fly in an airplane, if you're about to travel to very high altitudes, but otherwise probably not worthwhile. There are two over-the-counter antihistamine eye drops, Aloe and Zaditor, that's ketotifen, and also the olopatadine, which is Patanol, Pataday, Pazio. The Patanol, Pataday, Pazio, available with prescription, but the Zaditor is an over-the-counter ketotifen eye drop that is good for ocular allergies. I've never used the eye drops. I usually, if I have eye symptoms, my wife has eye symptoms, usually the nasal steroids is good enough. You have dry eyes.
I have dry eyes, so I use eye drops for that. But I have had patients who've had a day, is that the eye drop version, and some of them think it helps a little bit, but I haven't been overly impressed.
I think you get the bulk. Again, avoidance is just the key to this. That's where you're going to get the bulk of your benefit, and then once again, the nasal steroids really are going to be the first thing we reach for as healthcare providers. That's our sponsor, Allergies When Sniffling and Sneezing Comes Every Spring. That's the thing. If you get a cold at this time of the year, every year, then you've probably got allergies. It's probably not a cold. We were talking last time. Ezekiel Emanuel wrote an article in Health Affairs, and he talks about the unfairness of the way medicines are priced. And again, we can worship capitalism. We can say this is the way our country was founded, free market, free enterprise. These drug companies have a right to make that money. They need to put that back into research. That's a little bogus. Frankly, a lot of research in the petrochemical industry and the auto industry is done on a much, much lower profit margin than these guys are running. I think they can do with a little less money. Perhaps they wouldn't be so engaged in transferring patents to Indian tribes if their legal department didn't quite have the funding that they have currently. So I don't think that that's so. The other thing to remember is that this is not a free market. You are not free to choose a different medicine, because in many cases, this medicine appears to be the best one for your disease. The other thing is, you are not paying for it out of pocket. Your insurance, and therefore everyone else on your insurance plan, if it is a very expensive medicine, is paying for it. So market forces. You can't walk away from this because you're not feeling the full price. And the other thing, with the FDA controlling approvals and with the insurance companies controlling whether or not this is on their formulary, there is really no free market here. That is an illusion, and that is a concern as well. This is, market forces simply can't work in this situation. He says, Emmanuel says, there are four principles to understanding whether a drug price is unjust. First of all, the principle of complete life. And I sort of like this. They said, if you're analyzing a drug price, you should not do it over a year or a course of chemotherapy over the lifetime of a person. That is the unit you should use. Does this drug improve your life, extend your life, and make it worthwhile? So if that drug basically burns through a lifetime of your savings and your insurance and only gives you 6 weeks, or if it gives you 3 months or a year, but you are bedbound for that period of time, is that a good use of the money? Secondly, the price of a drug should reserve enough resources for people to pursue valuable life activities. You do not want to spend every available penny on drugs.
Well, and what is the image that the pharmaceutical companies put out on TV? If you take this drug, you're going to be happy and healthy, and you're going to go for long walks in the garden and attend your child's wedding. And, well, yeah, there's that too. But travel
the
world.
That's the one place, Rick, you mentioned, that's the one place where the free market may actually work. That is, most people have to pay cash for those medicines. I won't say everybody. There are some support, but you have to decide exactly how much cash you're willing to part with in order to enjoy erectile dysfunction drugs. But back to the others, you know, if you are sick, Shelley's absolutely right. These drugs show the skin rash that has made you an outcast in society clearing up, and suddenly you can go out with a short sleeve shirt on and not feel self-conscious.
You just can't afford to go anywhere.
Yeah, or they show you're able to play soccer with your kids for, looks like, the first time ever. Looking at some of these people playing soccer with their kids, or so forth. And so the idea is they restore you to function. Well, then they should. Over your lifetime, they should do that. And also, you should have enough money to buy a soccer ball or to pay the admission fee to the county fair or wherever you're or the picnic along the lake. Then secondly, there should exist a close relationship between the actual benefits and a price. Or, I'm sorry, that's the third thing. So, over your lifetime, enough resources left to pursue other activities, and there should be a relationship between the benefits and the price. And then finally, life activities other than health matter in considering the benefits. We should also consider how it affects your education, employment, and valuable life activities. And once again, if a drug leaves you gasping for breath and hooked to a hose or something like that, that is not as valuable. And so he said, based on those things, he said, these are the things we ought to consider, and here's how we do that as a practical matter. Right now, we consider what we call quality-adjusted life years. That is, how many quality-adjusted life years can you gain as a result of taking this drug? That's the standard, and it treats its disease. It doesn't really look at how much money you're going to spend over your lifetime or anything else. For instance, certainly the hepatitis C drugs, they're $85,000 to $90,000 a pop to treat hepatitis C. Now, they keep you from getting a liver transplant. So there's a win, right? I mean, liver transplants are very expensive. It's a good thing. But if you treat the 3.5 million Americans with hepatitis C, with those drugs, it would cost over $170 billion, one-third of all of our drug spending in 2018 just to treat hepatitis C.
So, but what happens if you don't treat them?
Well, that's the drug company argument, Rick.
But, I mean, what is it, though?
I mean, yes.
I'm asking you as a doctor.
A percentage of them would go on to transplant
or
develop
die.
Liver cancer or die. Yeah. And now, my counter argument to that is we're not talking about not treating them. We're talking about treating them with a sensibly priced drug. And sensible pricing is not $85,000 to $100,000 for a 6-week course.
I think you shared that article with me a week or so ago. And the thing I really like about it is the idea of holding the pharmaceutical companies, their product, to a standard, holding them accountable. Do you meet these quality markers? If you don't do these things, because they're sort of advertising, they're giving the impression that they're going to do those things, I just don't think they would meet the mark. I think they would get failing grades.
Will I go for a picnic with my friends on the lake after I take your drug?
Yeah, but if I've never went on a picnic with my friends at the lake before this happens, that's not really a fair assessment.
I don't think Phil Mickelson has played soccer with his kids before. Professional golfer, on the road a lot, and he did not look comfortable playing soccer.
A 3- or 4-time Masters champion, I'm going to guess, can kick a soccer ball in a backyard.
I don't think he's played soccer with his kids. I'm not. He's not a bad parent. This is not slamming Phil Mickelson, but you brought it up. I just think that those things are unrealistic, and I understand what you're saying, but I'm still going to stick with that. So back to Ezekiel Emanuel. He says, currently, the lifetime costs for health care are around 31% of your disposable income. That is, you take your income, your lifetime income, take away what you spend on food, what you spend on housing, what you spend on educating your family, taking care of your family. You wind up with a certain amount of money, and a third of that money essentially is going to go to health care. Lifetime. Drugs account for 17% of the healthcare expenses, and that is rising rapidly. So if he said, look, if we allowed a limit that's 10% higher than the average, then healthcare could, for some people, go up from 31% to 41% of their disposable income, and drugs could go up from 17% to 27%. And if you look at the 27% of the disposable income of a person, a male with a bachelor's degree, you're looking at $70,000 lifetime for drugs.
Doesn't sound like much to me. Well, because I mean, it's not going to be front loaded for most people, right? It's all going to come towards the end of life.
It is going to come toward the end. $70,000. Rick sneezes at that, even though
I think it's going to be higher.
It's allergy season. Well, it is right now. Absolutely.
No, I think it's going to be a higher number. I think it's too low.
He said, if you take $70,000 lifetime and spend that on drugs, that is higher than the amount of money you will spend on food and higher than the amount of money you will spend on raising a child through age 17. And it is more than you would spend seeing your doctors throughout your life. That is a very, very generous amount, $70,000 lifetime. And so he says, you know, if the price of this drug is going to exceed, it's going to push you over $70,000 lifetime, then it needs to be adjusted. And that gets pretty interesting. You know, I will tell you right now, if you have diabetes, that's $300 a month. You have diabetes for 30 years. If you're taking insulin for 30 years, that's going to be $300 a month. You're already up to $36,000.
What if I have severe allergies?
there's that. You throw in cholesterol and blood pressure.
Do I have to keep an EpiPen handy all the time?
And you are well over 70,000 just for those things. Never mind, you're going to develop a cancer at age 70 or something like that. You're already at your limit just with those things. An inhaler, $250 to $300 a month for an inhaler. You take two or three of those, you're going to hit your 36 to 40,000 just on your asthma or breathing problems alone. So you can see we need a downward adjustment. We're the expensive cancer drugs we're talking about, the expensive drugs for conditions like psoriasis, that cannot be allowed to stand. It's simply we do not have that kind of money in our healthcare system to treat those conditions over a person's lifetime with that level of drugs at that expense. $70,000. Something for our Health Matters fans to think about is what would be the just price for lifetime price for, and I really like the ideas he advanced. I'm not saying that he says this is a number. It could be any number, but I'm throwing this number out. And if you start thinking about this number, it brings you, first of all, it makes you realize these drugs are massively overpriced. And then secondly, there's some other conclusions that are really interesting. The more popular a drug is, like a cholesterol medicine, the lower the price should be. Right now, if you have a popular drug, the price is high. But if you are talking about taking a slice of the collective pie, the amount of money that people have available to spend on healthcare, the more people that take your drug, the cheaper it needs to be. So you, in that sense, you want to have a drug that is moderately popular but not a what we call now a blockbuster medicine. We will be glad to hear from our radio fans on our Facebook page about what you think about that. Meanwhile, you may talk amongst yourselves.
Because I don't know, Tony, talking about drugs, it's just difficult. Always has been. For 15 or 16 years now doing this show, you get onto drugs and I just decide that it's time to take a nap.
Well, let me ask you, Rick. I mean, we don't have to make any confessionals on air, but none of the three of us, none of us has a severe chronic disease that requires expensive medicines.
No.
Okay.
No.
And so, you know, and the thing is, with the way...
I would venture to say none of us are on any long-term medications.
And so...
Or anything, yes.
Yeah, well, I mean, if it is it's something minor, I don't want to pry into the personal health of the folks in the studio here, but we aren't. And so the idea of taking a medication that actually exceeds the amount of money we put into our insurance, that is asking the community to pay for our medications, which is pretty much what most of these more expensive, the $100,000 or more medicines, you're asking other people on insurance to pick up the tab for your medications. I have no experience with
but
that.
But the thing is I am lockstep with that idea of, you know, that sounds rough, but, you know, you get a little older, you realize sometimes that's the only way certain things will work. You know, at some point you need the healthy young people to pay for the older, less healthy people.
There you've said it. There it is.
I mean, you need it. I mean, we do that with our tax base, right? I mean, our tax base is built out the exact same way. And while I may not like it, I do recognize the fact that a tiered system is probably the only thing that's ever going to work.
Well, let me ask you, where do you put yourself on that scale of young people paying for older people or older people getting younger people to pay for it?
It's a thing that they're people working. Money is covering the Social Security.
I just wonder, are you coasting or are you pedaling right now? That's my question.
All of us coasting in here are pedaling pretty hard. Right?
Okay. Just want to make sure I know where you stand because you caught me off guard.
But
with
I just
that.
Think the.
Hey, here's the thing.
See,
we've got a new. We'll talk about this in the show, but we have a new radio show producer. Shamari Mosley is now. She's starting her reign as producer of this show.
Tells me we're going to go on a quick hiatus.
Wonderful woman. And so, Rick, right away, as soon as she gets in the studio, he hits her with this young people should pay for old people's conditions.
If you remember the first time I met her, I called her Mo.
Just throwing it out. That's not the way you break in the new producer.
But Tony, before we close this thing out, get out of here. People do need to understand what I'm trying to say. I mean, the insurance system, by its very nature, mimics our tax system.
Yes. Yeah. There is a redistribution.
A redistribution of wealth within the system to pay so that everybody can experience the same benefits.
And I got to tell you,
I don't like it, but it's the only way. The only way that it works.
That's where we're in agreement here in Eastern Kentucky, working with underserved populations and also working in a free clinic. You get to see people who don't have the benefit of that system, and it breaks your heart.
Right.
It is not in any way fair and just in this country. There is no fairness there, and I absolutely agree with you on that.
So it is a tough thing when somebody needs what they would deem a life-saving drug, or they're told it's a life-saving drug.
But see, we can't ask, I think we can't ask people by the fact that they buy insurance to support this level of excess among our pharmaceutical companies. That's where the injustice. It's not that people don't deserve health care. The thing is, we cannot support the level of profits that these companies are pulling out of the healthcare system for these drugs. And Emmanuel at least starts to the dialogue to thinking of how we would change the system. Meanwhile, though, we've got
to get
off.
Well, we've given lots of things to think about. Special thanks to our new Morehead State Public Radio producer, Shamari Mosley, and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember,
the United States is in the grips of an unseen epidemic of harm from the excessive listening to radio shows. If nothing is done to change current practices, radio overload will lead to the premature deaths of 150,000 older Americans over the next decade and reduce the quality of life for millions more.
Every day, 750 older people living in the United States, age 65 and older, are hospitalized due to serious side effects from one or more radio shows. Over the last decade, older people sought medical treatment more than 35 million times for adverse show events, and there were more than 2 million hospital admissions.
Focusing on reducing inappropriate or unnecessary shows could save as much as $62 billion over the next decade in unnecessary hospitalization for older adults alone.
The practice of listening to multiple radio shows at the same time, called polyharkening in the scientific literature, has reached epidemic proportions. More than 4 in 10 older adults hear 5 or more shows a day, an increase of 300% over the past 2 decades. Nearly 20% hear 10 shows or more.
We at Health Matters will continue to broadcast on this important problem facing America's seniors.
Well, whatever you do, do not take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for more exciting news from the world of medical research on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Morehead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.